The numbers told the story, they always do.
He's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
What's up, folks? Welcome in. It is a numbers game presented by BetMGM. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel. Gil Alexander has the day off. A little bit of a frog in his throat. So hopefully Gil, of course, recovers nicely and come back and take control of the desk. Kelly Bidlin is here as well. We got a good show on tap for you today. Adam Kramer is going to come up in about 15 minutes. We'll discuss everything when it comes to the national championship in college football. It's really interesting matchups when it comes to Georgia and TCU, specifically that secondary, what that's going to look like against TCU and that explosive offense, and where this number might get to. Talking to some folks around town, probably some late push on Georgia, much like we saw a late push on Ohio State, that might get this a lot closer to that 14 mark or even to 14. Jake Hahn's going to be with us, co-host of The Point. We'll talk a little hockey as well in the National Hockey League. I'm very excited because as somebody who has to cover the NBA on a day-to-day basis, everything is just reading real quick about what's going on in the NHL.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited to get some questions answered and hopefully get talked into a future bet that I can keep track of.
JVT, I enjoy throwing on like the 10 minutes of hockey, each night after whatever said NBA game that I'm betting is over. Like last night, you know, after I lost on the Nets, I think I watched 10 minutes of hockey.
Okay. Yeah. See, so and that's the thing that stinks, because I will say, I actually really enjoy hockey. For me is like soccer. If you sit me down and put me down for a hockey game or a soccer game, I'll watch the whole thing. I love the sport itself. It is absolutely fantastic. It just really clashes with my schedule.
Me too. You know, completely agree.
Love to watch it. That's why NHL playoffs, I would agree, are awesome, just because you get like the day, every other day, especially when it gets deeper into the playoffs, you like to watch it. Danny Burks is with us too, host of the Pro Football Betting Podcast. We're going to talk about this in the second hour. Kelly, there's like four games that have circled the wagers I've already made or I'm going to make when it comes to the National Football League once numbers are posted. Fascinating, because it's like a mini preseason when it comes to information and action.
Yep.
And I cannot wait to go over some of those with you, and if you can tell me whether or not I'm kind of barking up the wrong tree, because I think there's a couple, including a couple of underdogs, are going to be pretty live from a money line standpoint. But we'll get to that in the second hour. We start with a little bit of last night, and we'll go to the NBA. It's a little bit of my strong suit, but it was also a deep card yesterday. Well, we had 12 games, I think, in the association, whatever it was, in the NBA last night. We'll start with Brooklyn, because the winning streak is over. Brooklyn Nets, of course, had won 12 consecutive games going into their matchup with Chicago, end up closing as a 5.5-point favorite, end up losing 121-112. Situationally, it was, I think, really fascinating, and that's one of the things that, Kelly, like, I have to do better at is accounting for situations, because I'll take you back about 10 days ago. Remember, the New York Knicks were in Dallas. Luka Doncic blows them up for that 60-point triple-double. He ties the game in regulation on a intentionally missed free throw. They go on to win that game in overtime. The Bulls were in an eerily similar situation. Bulls, of course, were in Cleveland the other night. They blow a 21-point lead against the Cavaliers. Donovan Mitchell goes nuts for over 70 points. And in that game, of course, they go to overtime, end up losing it. So you figured, okay, what is this follow-up going to be like for the Chicago Bulls? Are they going to go down the path of the Knicks, who lost outright to the Spurs in the next game, or are they going to show up and fight? Sure enough, they did, and dropped 121 points as a 5.5-point underdog. So everything's fine with the Brooklyn Nets. I am curious, because if you look at it from like a statistical standpoint, the Bulls have not been the greatest offense in the NBA. Offensive rating of 114.2. Is this the start of, I think, not a decline in Brooklyn's defense, but they've been a top five defense since they fired Steve Nash. I feel like that's somewhat fraudulent. Maybe we saw little signs of like the real defense for Brooklyn. Still think they're going to be an above average team, but it's interesting the ripple effects from this and what we see from Brooklyn going forward after the mojo is kind of like gone. You know?
Yeah, I haven't watched that entire game last night. And look, I did think it was a interesting spot, like you said as well, from the Chicago side. But Chicago, from preseason up until this point, I'm sorry, it's just not a team I don't really believe in much this year. I think last year was way more of an outlier for what this team can really get accomplished with the guys they have on this roster. But to your point at the end there, JVT, I do think what I saw last night was the concerns I had about the Nets heading into the season.
Yeah.
And they showed more at the beginning of the season. Like you said, over the past, month, you haven't seen it as much, but they got beat up on the boards. You know, when Nick Claxton, he's great, but he's got to go up to against a bigger bodied true center like a Vucevic. He got dominated kind of in that matchup last night. And whenever he's off the court then, Vooch is doing everything he wants down low, right? And the Bulls are smart enough, well-coached team, Billy Donovan. You just keep going to it. If it's working, keep going to it. And that's what they kept doing over and over again. So I think it's one. I've got it circled for Friday. John, where I don't know if I'm going to get involved with the Pelicans Nets game, but Valanciunas and Vooch, they're pretty similar players. And if you're the Pelicans and Willie Green, you saw what the Bulls did Wednesday night with the Nets. I'd be looking at the same thing. I think a player prop tomorrow night out on Valanciunas on his points plus rebounds could be a good play.
Yeah. Well, and it's fascinating for multiple reasons, too. And, of course, we know Zion Williamson a little dinged up, too, for the New Orleans Pelicans, and a physical mismatch for a lot of teams. But that would be a pretty big absence. That's the case for the New Orleans Pelicans. Coming from this game, too, we should mention – so the theme in the NBA lately, right, you and Gil were hitting on it a while, it was these big upsets for a while, right? And we actually had a couple last night, including the Miami Heat going down to Los Angeles Lakers. Pretty solid money line underdog there. But what's also been happening recently are these incredible individual performances, right? Giannis the other night again has an insane game. You see the final score, by the way, from the Lakers, 112-109, 8.5-point underdog, win the game outright, no LeBron James. But what I wanted to bring up was, so as we're talking about these individual performances, what's kind of been lost is these comebacks have been absolutely ridiculous. Now, Giannis yesterday, 30-20-10. There have been three of those in the last 18 days, Jokic and Luka. There were three of them in the previous 4,642 days. Prior to that, there were three of them in the previous 13,915 days. So first off, this angle.
Great stuff from Mike Adams, as always.
Mike is awesome. I love being in contact with him. He's a fantastic dude and a great mind. These, first off, from the individual performances, these are all also, by the way, like MVP candidates. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Like, these guys are all competing for an MVP award, and whether it is Donovan Mitchell dropping 70, whether it is Giannis going for 30-20-10, whether it's Luka dropping a 60-point triple-double, and then 50 points following that. It is nuts watching on a night-to-night basis these dudes perform individually and put up these numbers that are historic almost every single night. Honestly, I don't really know what to do with them. I don't know what they mean, right? I don't know what you're spinning forward, right? But it is incredible to watch all of these guys perform on a night-to-night basis. They've been nuts. And some of them, too, with the crazy thing is I wanted to bring up part of this, too, because we'll get to the comeback momentarily. But it's a lot of them, Kelly, are doing it by themselves, right? Like Luka by himself. I watched because I had Cavaliers minus 3.5 in that game against Chicago. Mm-hmm. I was watching the second half. Cleveland literally, J.B. Bickerstaff was like, dude, we have nothing. Donovan, you need to play every single minute here in the second half and into overtime. And he was like, sure. And every possession was Donovan Mitchell. That's the crazy part about it. It's not even just the individual performances. Giannis is on a shorthanded team. Luka's on a team that has nobody to create. And Donovan Mitchell the other night didn't have Darius Garland. Every possession, you know they're getting the ball. And every possession, they're doing something incredible.
Yeah, see, Luka, the whole team's designed around that, right? Like, we almost shouldn't be surprised when that happens with Luka. You're right, though, when you talk about these other guys when there's actually players on the court. It's a little bit more eye-opening. I thought the comments that Giannis had the other night of, everybody kind of took it as more of an applaud Giannis. He wants to be boring, right, where he was like, I want to be boring doing this. What I kind of read into that more is Giannis is finally realizing that if he just plays this kind of way every night, nobody can stop him.
Yeah.
He's just unstoppable. Stop jacking up threes, go right to the rim every single time. You're going to get fouled or you're going to make a bucket. He's unstoppable, and I think with how much time Holiday and Middleton have missed this year, I think it's going to help his game. Somehow his game's still continuing to grow, which is incredible.
And the other part of this that we need to bring up, and this is the other thing, there's these things that are happening in the NBA, right? One of them is these individual performances. For a while, it was these upsets. We are in now a spike of ridiculous comebacks. That's the other part about this. Last night, lost, of course, in all of this, is that the Toronto Raptors went on a 28-7 run to close regulation out, tie it, and force overtime. Now, they ended up losing 104-101. And this was a weird number, too, from a market standpoint. I wrote about this yesterday morning, which was this went overnight from Bucks minus 2 to Raptors minus 5.5. And it went quick. And it was one of those where you're like, oh, Giannis isn't playing. Like, he can't be playing. Like, there's no way that this thing moves that quickly. Ultimately does. But, like, when you look at this comeback, it's part of one where we see, like I mentioned, it's this comeback to force overtime. It's Donovan Mitchell and the Cleveland Cavaliers coming back from down 21 points. It's Luka Doncic and the Dallas Mavericks against the New York Knicks coming back from down 9 with 30 seconds left in the game in regulation. It is, by the way, remember, the Philadelphia 76ers about a week and a half ago against the Los Angeles Clippers. They had that game where they were down 20 points. They came back and they won that game against Los Angeles. Like, there are so many of these ridiculous comebacks. And I've talked to Gil about this before, Kelly, and it's one that I've done a little bit more this year. I just don't know, like, betting pre-flop in the NBA sometimes I feel like it's such a fool's errand, and I do it a lot. But I like, and even when you cover, right? You're always, more than likely, I shouldn't say always, you're going to get a better number than what you're looking at preflop for whatever side that you want.
Yeah, I think it's funny you bring it up, because where I've really moved with my betting is looking, you know, like we hear a lot of guys that split their bet full game and first half. How I look at it, JVT, is I'm usually splitting my bets full game. I'm going in with like a half unit play and then looking to add in game. So like example last night, it was a losing example, but I laid 4.5 with the Nets pregame and on an overnight line. But then I got in live a couple times on the Nets. Didn't work out, but you're getting better numbers. And like you said, even when you're winning and covering, usually still able to find better numbers within the game.
Yeah, and I generally, that's one of the things they'll do with high totals and or big favorites. Those things get off to slow starts. Big favorites do as well, and you can get some better numbers with both of those.
The only problem, real quick, though, is I texted you about this. Like, Grizzlies was what I was looking at getting in last night. You have to be okay that if you don't get involved pregame, sometimes you're not going to get the opportunity.
Yep, correct. Before we take a break, we do want to update everybody about this. So the news lately around DeMar Hamlin, of course, of the Buffalo Bills. Mario Hamlin, his father, reportedly did inform the Bills team via a Zoom that his son is making progress. There's positive steps being made, and no real update on his status so far, but it's always really good to hear that positive steps are being made to his recovery here. So that is, of course, via Mario Hamlin, DeMar Hamlin's father, in talking with the Buffalo Bills just yesterday. We'll take our break here, come back. We have a lot to get to. Adam Kramer's going to be with us next. We'll talk about the college football national championship. And coming up, I am so excited. I was reminded this a couple days ago. Golf season's here, baby. Can't wait.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back in. It's a numbers game presented by BetMGM. It is time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM has all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds, specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today. Stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID and open an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Got to be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Gil Alexander. Gil out sick today, hopefully has a speedy recovery. We'll be back soon. We do have Adam Kramer with us, VSiN college football analyst, Kegs and Eggs up on Twitter. Nice enough to give us some time earlier this morning. Adam, always good to talk to you, man. So I kind of wanted to go back to the weekend that was and get your thoughts on this. I was talking with somebody the other day, and their thought was, they thought Michigan actually outplayed TCU. TCU is, for lack of a better term, lucky to be here, and that score was misleading and relatively fraudulent. When you hear analysis like that, you look at the box score, outgained the TCU Horned Frogs, all these, do you believe that that is the case, that TCU, not lucky, but was outplayed and still moved on here to face Georgia?
I don't know about outplayed. Good to talk to you, by the way. I don't know about outplayed. They certainly caught some breaks, right? And Michigan caught some breaks as well in this game. When you had as many turnovers as this one did, it was just a weird football game. So, there's no doubt that TCU benefited. Think of like even the first play of the game where you rip off the long run. You ultimately are able to run him down, and then, you know, you get no points. So the red zone inefficiencies, for sure. I mean, all of this benefited TCU, and I think they had to have this type of game. But I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily take that away. I mean, that's the way this sport goes. You know that, I know that. That's how this whole thing works, right? I thought in general the game was just bizarre. The playing surface was a disaster. You had some really bizarre coaching going on across college football this weekend, by the way. Mm-hmm. But in this game, you had turnovers. You had the fumble on the 1 yard line. You had the questionable calls. To me, the story really was just a very odd football game with a lot of unique sequences, more than just being lucky or anything like that. Yeah, that's the way it is. Michigan's a better team. They have better players. If you follow recruiting at all, you know this. So none of that necessarily should be a surprise.
So as we kind of spin this forward then for TCU, because generally a lot of people will try to look at something like this and go, okay, well, outgained, benefited from two defensive touchdowns. You know, the market is going to overvalue this team moving on to the next contest. There's going to be some value in playing against them. You know, when we talk about this number too, it does give you an idea. Some spots up at 13.5, get down to 12.5. Would TCU be a team that you are looking to play against given the result and the fact that maybe they were outplayed?
For me, yeah. And it's not necessarily tied to this specific game. I have a story coming up on Beeson today. I want to get back into recruiting, not that anybody cares, but I can't help. In the last 5 years, Georgia's recruited 25 five-star players. TCU's recruited one, not ultimately end up with the program. He transferred out of there in Zach Evans, right? So, again, I was impressed with the way that TCU physically held up against Michigan, especially online. Disruptive behind the scrimmage plays. I think it's just a different beast entirely for Georgia. Georgia also, by the way, did not play well last week. If you looked at the faces of Kirby Smart and Stetson Bennett, they looked like they were shocked. I mean, Kirby flat out said it, that Ohio State he thought deserved to win, which you don't usually hear a coach say. So, yeah, I think in terms of sizing up the rosters and everything else, Georgia is the very few teams that can compete athletically with Georgia, and it just beat one. And they got lucky in that game. So as we talk about kind of breaks and getting to this point, it was an odd semifinal, an exciting semifinal for all of us, but an odd one. I think Georgia's absolutely in a position, I think, to kind of right the ship and certainly, you know, potentially cover the spread.
So one of the talking points for Georgia heading into that match with Ohio State was if there was a weakness per se, right? It was going to be how does this secondary hold up against Ohio yep. State's offense and how C.J. Stroud performed wonderfully under pressure and actually this offense looked great through the air. Is that something that TCU can exploit or is this just a different type of offense that's not going to be able to go after the secondary the way that Ohio State did?
No, that secondary is a mess, right? You're not going to fix it. They gave up 500 yards passing to LSU in the SEC championship game. Granted, LSU was behind a lot, so the whole flow of that game was a little bit different. But you use that coming in, and it wasn't just guys getting open. They were wide open. So I think ultimately how Georgia's going to have to counter that is not necessarily fixing their secondary. It's going to be fixing the pass rush. What's a really interesting matchup in this, though, is getting – the, you know, how are you going to include that pass rush? Mm-hmm. Are you going to, are you going to send extra blitzers? Are you going to get it with your front four? And then what's that going to look like from there? So, because if you do pressure, and Michigan tried this, Max Duggan can make you pay. He ran the ball well, obviously can extend plays. There were a couple of huge plays that he threw the ball just to the flats that resulted in a ton of yardage. So, schematically, if you're into that sort of thing for this game, that's really going to be the key, in my opinion, is how uncomfortable do you make Duggan and how much do you sell out to get him? Because if you don't get him, it's going to be a problem. I think in general, though, the general Georgia flow, Kirby Smart obviously is a Nick Saban guy. I don't think he wants a 42-41 game. I think he wants to avoid all of that. I think he probably wants to go back to his boa constrictor football roots, which is run the football, which they didn't do enough of, although they ran the ball well, and really just shrink the game. If I'm Kirby Smart, that's what I'm thinking here, which is, you know, assert yourself physically and try not to get into a shootout because that's where it becomes a problem.
Yeah, kind of going down that path, too, I was thinking this is kind of correlated, right? Like in terms of if you like Georgia in this matchup, I would tend to think this goes under the total. If you like TCU, you're expecting higher scoring like we saw between Georgia and Ohio State, right?
Exactly. That is exactly the way I've looked. That's why I like the under because I think Georgia in this game – is in a position to control the clock. I think you'd be able to tell pretty early just what the rhythm of the football game is going to be. Is Georgia getting, you know, space up front? Again, TCU was up for it against Michigan in a way that I didn't think was possible. So this is kind of me saying something similar that I thought about the last game, but saying this time for real. And I think you're going to know pretty early on where you stand as you size these two teams up. But I have to say, that playing surface for Michigan and TCU – I feel like that impacted the game a great deal. I feel like it neutralized speed. You had officials and kickers, falling all over. That field is a disaster. And we're going to play Super Bowl on that field. That field is a disaster. I can't get over the fact, and watching the game again, just how much I thought that impacted the game, which, by the way, is horrible. We can't possibly have that moving forward.
Yep. So from the Georgia offense perspective, when we're talking about, the way this game plays out, is it a given that they're going to be able to have success here against TCU? I mean, I think it's pretty clear at this point. TCU is a pretty, like, relatively solid, maybe on a down-to-down basis, but there are explosive plays that are going to be allowed by this defense.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, when you look at Stetson Bennett, who had a spot in that game for, I don't know, 15 to 20 minutes where he looked completely lost.
Terrible.
Outside of that, yeah, you know, he threw for 398 yards. The part in this which was fascinating was, you know, where was Brock Bowers? And Georgia's getting healthier at wide receiver, which I think helps. And again, they did not run the ball a ton, largely because they were down for a good chunk of that game. Georgia's going to find success. TCU defensively is not not a top 25 defense. Where TCU shined against Michigan was negative plays and creating some, you know, long yardage situations that threw everything off kilter. So if TCU can continue to do that, I think that's a really good formula for success. The problem is, it's hard to bank on that. A loss of 3 yards, 4 yards, whatever it is. So I think, yes, Georgia's going to have success offensively. There's just too much talent on this team and with that roster and the experience of playing in this game for them not to.
So this number is down to 12. Actually, the low right now on the screen is 11.5, total 63 or 63.5. So I hear that. Wow. Like, what is this playable up to? Like, just under 14, this is a play for Georgia from a side perspective?
That's for me. Yeah, that's for me. When it got to 13.5, I was intrigued. And now just to see it, you know, I was writing about it last night. I saw some 12s out there. 12.5 was the number. I'm going to see where this thing goes. But, yeah, it's no knock on TCU. I just think what we're seeing with them, like, is not normal, right? The college football playoff has been so top-heavy. And when I talk about recruiting, it's like you have to have a formula to get into this game. And you have to essentially be in Ohio State, Georgia, and Alabama, Clemson, right? You have to have all these certain things. TCU really defies that. They did it with a Thorpe Award winner, maybe the best wide receiver in college football, a great running back who, by the way, is questionable, and that's a big story in this game for sure. And obviously a Heisman candidate QB. That's all it takes, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it'll be very interesting to see how they counteract all that Georgia's roster has. But this is an outlier. It's also why I'm excited about playoff expansion, because it creates more scenarios like this where you can have a team have this magical run and somehow make it into this game.
At Kegs and Eggs up on Twitter, Adam Kramer, VSiN College Football Analyst. Adam, always good to talk to you, man. Thanks a lot for the time.
Appreciate you, buddy. Take care.
You got it. Can I tell you my favorite tweet about Stetson Bennett that was tweeted out about a month ago from John W.? Stetson Bennett is 25 years old, throwing quick slants to five stars against 18, 19-year-old defensive backs and acts like he's the second coming of Christ.
I saw some interview with him. I saw an interview with him yesterday. I don't know if it was when it was recorded. It was very odd about him talking about himself and his journey, where he's like, people have expected a lot. People haven't expected a lot. I'm like,
I got to tell you, the more I see of him, it's like, I get it. The confidence is starting to go like this. And I'm like, boy, you want to slow it down. All right, when we come back, let's go to Kapalua, man. We got some golf to discuss.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber for only $79. Get access to everything we do from now through the big dance. Sign up today. You're going to receive $20 to buy VSiN sports betting hats, shirts, mugs, and other great gear at our online store. Only VSiN Pro subscribers get access to our daily recap of the top plays made by VSiN show hosts and guests, betting splits, and betting reports. It's a limited time offer, folks, so sign up now. Get VSiN Pro access to the end of March Madness at VSiN.com/subscribe. I know that I teased something, Kelly. There is some breaking news that I think I should put out there. This is from Sham Sharanya. Amazing news. Buffalo Bills have announced that DeMar Hamlin is neurologically intact. He is showing extremely positive signs toward recovery from critical condition due to cardiac arrest. That came down about 2 minutes ago or so. So big news there, and obviously a very happy bit of news when it comes to DeMar Hamlin and his health. So if anything else comes down throughout the show, we will keep you updated on that. So with that, we were talking a little bit about the national championship, TCU, Georgia. Georgia now down to an 11.5-point favorite at one shot, 12.5 across the board right now with a total of 63.5. Looking at the screen, I'll double-check and pull up some global odds as well, make sure that this is an accurate statement that I'm about to make. But I do believe that South Point at this moment is on the high side of the total with that 63.5.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, right? Yeah, I think so.
63.5, and I don't see anything higher than that out there. I do see a 62.5 at MGM.
I see quite a bit of 62.5, and that would be far away places as well. So South Point on the high side of 63.5. And so you asked during the break, like, if I had made any bets. And that's actually why I asked Adam about it. The one bet I was looking to make was betting this thing under the total. Mm-hmm. I think what you look at with a total like this is a little bit of recency bias. The last two games were incredible, right? They were two incredibly high-scoring affairs. The offenses looked pretty good. TCU had two defensive touchdowns that really helped out with the scoring. But I think Adam hit on a point which I think is going to be somewhat interesting to watch here is, do Max Duggan and the TCU Horned Frogs have the horses and the – not the like the dynamic aspect, because their offense is very dynamic. It's about getting athletes out in space, though, and whatnot. Do they have that to challenge this Georgia secondary, or will they just kind of be suffocated to death here against Georgia? Yeah. And as somebody who kind of leans a little bit more toward the Bulldog side in this matchup, but I'm going to go back to the games that we kind of watched in the regular season. You know, that 45-7 game against Oregon actually went under the total by a half point. I remember because I was on it. And I was sweating out that final Bo Nix possession. It was like an 18-play drive. They went down to almost score, and they didn't. But, like, they suffocated the life out of Oregon. They suffocate the life out of, Tennessee in that matchup. Even Florida, where that was an 8-point game in that second half, Georgia put the clamps down, didn't allow anything else after that. They go on to run away with that game. I think we're going to get back to what we are used to seeing with Georgia, which is the ability to continue, contain this offense, play a little bit more of a slow and plodding pace when it comes to their offense, not needing to catch up with an offense that was scoring at will like the way Ohio State was, and being able to play the style that I think we're a little bit more used to. So I would think, and we'll see, because I think this also, like I mentioned, correlates to the side, right? Mm-hmm. If there is some, you know, really notable and sharp action that is going to support TCU, I would expect that this total starts to climb back to 63.5, where market-wide's at 62.5. But I would think that 63.5 is going to start to come down as that line for Georgia starts to come back to 14. You know.
Yeah, I don't want to talk to, you know, about TCU like they're not a impressive team or a power five, you know, power five team, which I feel like there's been a lot of discussion about that this year on this show too. But the I do think it's an important point when once you get 2-3 deep, you know, in the depth chart. The athletes that Georgia's bringing in and year out, it's just hard to compete with that. And look, this is only one game, so some of that you can maybe just, you know, throw out the window. But I think what I'm going to be looking at playing here is maybe a Georgia first half play, which I know is going to be a popular bet already. I think that's sitting at 7. I just checked that during the break. I think I might just lay the point. If there's a 6.5 that pops at any point on that, I think I'm going to bet that. Lay 6.5 in the first half. Then enjoy, you know, during halftime, enjoy an entire NBA game and come back and watch the second half of the game, because the halftimes are ridiculous in college football.
These games are freaking long, man.
Yeah, it takes forever.
It was crazy. And
I don't know why they need 27-minute halftimes. Like, it's
especially on that day, right? Like, it was New Year's Eve. Like,
yes.
Like, my wife was old lady watching, like, you know, like the New York, like the it was like Hannah Montana or what's her name? Miley Cyrus, like partying with Dolly Parton, like watching other people party, the peak of old people.
Right? It is which bizarre. Yeah. Okay, so I've been out here for 4 years. Now, this is the first year that I was at home watching that stuff, and I'm like, wait, it's bizarre that they like play the stuff out here early and yeah. Like pretend that it's not, or like, I'm sorry, they like tape delay it till later, and it's weird, like we're like pretending like it's not New Year's on the East Coast out here.
So the one my wife was watching, it was just the live one, so okay. Like they counted down at like 9 p.m. so like we're at 9. And she's like, all right, cool, time to go to bed. I'm like, it's not New Year's. Like, what are you doing?
That's right.
Like, it was I'm telling you, my wife's like 2.5 years younger than me, so she's turning 30 this year. I'm like, dude, you got the aging curve right now. You got to slow this thing down a little bit. But you're right, those things are ridiculously long. And like you said, good chunk of an NBA game you'll be able to watch the break. It is nuts. But we'll see. I'm very interested to see, talking with, you know, some odds makers around town and just gauging where they think this might end up. The thought that I have generally gotten back is, it's going to move back toward Georgia. The question just is when. And it is interesting to see, too, generally, right, the thought is that the early movement in lines is like the sharp bettors who are shaping numbers and whatnot. But again, kind of reaching out and getting some public, you know, just gauging on what some of these odds makers are talking about. It does not seem to be the case so far. So we'll see if that's going to start to maybe move in the direction of Georgia and we get that Ohio State thing. For those who don't remember, Friday night into Saturday, there was just this big, ungodly push toward Ohio State. Ultimately, was right? Went from 6.5 all the way down to 5, and in some places far away, 4.5, and ultimately ended up being the right side. All right, so with that, I teased it. Let's talk about it. I'm excited. So I told Kelly, so everybody has their New Year's resolutions, right?
Yeah.
I have a betting resolution for 2023. And it's not that I don't bet golf, but I'll bet maybe 6 tournaments, right?
Yeah, I remember you've been getting into it more and more over the past couple years.
And you know
years.
Me, like,
yeah.
I love it. I'll sit down, I'll watch entire tournaments. I enjoy it very much so. My New Year's resolution is to bet every golf tournament this year. Maybe not that, but just to get involved because I love golf. I want to follow it and watch it more. We do great golf content here between the guys on Long Shots. You and Matt do great stuff. I'm really excited to keep track of the season, and we get it started today with the Century Tournament of Champions. So I've got four plays that I have made from a tournament standpoint, from a future standpoint. One of the things that I want to get involved with more, and you've shown me a little bit of a modeling website that I can get into more to help me with matchup betting. But it's going to be great. Kapalua is awesome. You have a very great field that's pretty short, and what this course is going to look like is going to be a lot of fun. Checking the weather, it seems like it's going to be beautiful, perfect. Saturday seems kind of like a windy day if you're looking ahead, like winds of like 14, 15 miles an hour. But for the most part, this should work really well.
Yeah, it's Hawaii. It's always tough to guess too far ahead of time what the winds are going to be like. And it's always windy to a degree.
Oh, dude, when I went out there for the first time a month or so ago, right? And it was like raining for a second, and then it stopped, and it was beautiful. And then it was downpouring for 20 seconds, and then it was beautiful again. So, yeah, the weather, God bless you if you want to try to,
look, it's one of those, if you're betting first-round leaders or anything, yes, you need to be very – first-round matchups, you need to be very well aware of that today. Today didn't look too bad when I looked at it last night. I haven't really looked into it too much more, though, here today, JVT. But, yeah, field 39 players, no-cut event, something to keep in mind. There will be no cut. This is a par 73, Kapalua, the course. Here, the plantation course is where they'll be playing in Kapalua. Almost 7,600 yards. So a long course, JVT, Greens, Bermuda. This is a longer course. It's a longer resort-style course, one that can be as long. Really, the only defense for this is the wind.
Yep.
So if there's no wind, you can see these guys, where we got 39 of the best guys in the world, we can see them go low. Like we saw Cam Smith last year go 34 under, and John Rahm was right behind him at 33 under. That could happen this year if the winds stay down.
Yeah, last year, average score 68.2, record low since the course assumed its role as host in 1999, beat the previous mark by almost a full stroke. So you get the idea of what you might see, and you mentioned, here are these recent winners and their scores. So I mentioned the bets that I've made. I added another one earlier today. Tony Finau at 15-1, Sung J.M. at 19-1, Jordan Spieth at 26-1, and Hideki Matsuyama at 40-1. So those are the three, as mentioned. I sent those to Kelly and then added one. We were talking right now before the show, and I was like, all right, cool, I'm adding one more. I haven't added any matchups. I want to get into this here, but the theme with the guys that I have bet, Kelly, and you know this very well, it's all course history. These guys have awesome numbers. Jordan Spieth, two strokes gained on this course of plus 2.36 over the course of 20 rounds. Same thing with Sung J.M. and Hideki Matsuyama. Recent form for a couple of those guys, namely Matsuyama and Spieth, hasn't been great. But given the long course history, or somewhat longest course history, I think it was pretty much worth it investing in those guys and those numbers.
Yeah, I think there's a couple things to keep your eye out for today. First of all, keep in mind this tournament will not start for another 4 hours from now. So keep that in mind. You've got a lot of golfers that are trying out new clubs. John Rahm, Xander Schauffele, two of those to keep an eye on. Also keep an eye on Xander Schauffele and his status for today. I screwed up yesterday on this show saying he had withdrew from the tournament. He had withdrew from the Pro-Am yesterday. But keep an eye. There's 4 hours to go. More than likely or not, he will tee it up, though, because this is the guaranteed money event. So all he's got to do is hit one tee shot, and then he could walk off. I'm going to assume he's probably going to play more than that, see how he's feeling. But look out for a possible withdrawal from him during the tournament. As far as my bets, real quick, outrights, I did play Finau 16-1, Sung J.M. 20-1, and Colmore Akawa at a little over 22-1. And then matchups, Victor Hovland plus 155 over Scotty Scheffler. Thought that was just a big number on Hovland. And then Cameron Young over Matt Fitzpatrick. Neither of these guys have played this course, but Cameron Young's game sets up very well for what this course should play.
All right, we get back to the association on the other side. Let's talk awards.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Football fans can turn a loss into a win with the king of sportsbooks. Just place a single. Well, I think we got this mixed up. Let's see. Okay, I got it. There we go. Thank you. Football fans can loss and win. Place a single first touchdown score prop bet on any Monday or Thursday night pro football game. If your bet loses, you're going to receive up to $25 back in free bets. Offers available all season long. Wager confidently. Take your game to the next level with BetMGM. Just log into your account, download the BetMGM app, sign up today, then wager on any player to score the first touchdown in any primetime game Monday or Thursday. And if your bet misses, you'll get up to $25 back in free bets. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Got to be 21 or older. Physically located in the state of BetMGM choosing. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued. There's non-withdrawable free bets or site credit. Fee bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Mississippi, Nevada, or New York. An update on the health of Bills safety DeMar Hamlin. We did get some positive news, of course, coming down just a couple of minutes ago, that he did make incredible strides overnight. We have details on that. Ian Rappaport and others reporting that DeMar Hamlin actually opened his eyes last night and is responsive. So, obviously, very, very good news and very relieving news to know that DeMar Hamlin is making, it seems, a very strong push toward recovery here. And we'll, again, keep you up to date as the show moves along, but some positive news coming down the pike as we get going on a numbers game.
A follow-up here from Rappaport. Hamlin has been gripping the hands of those close to him, another very positive sign. Incredible, JVT. We all been kind of waiting for this moment and hoping this was going to come, and obviously there's still a long way to go. Don't want to jump the gun here, but it is it's just incredible news after what we all saw on Monday night, which was not really something, that a lot of us have ever seen anything close to before. So just great to see this news come down.
Agreed. Also, the official statement from the Buffalo Bills: per the physicians caring for DeMar Hamlin at the University of Cincinnati Medical Center, DeMar has shown remarkable improvement over the past 24 hours. While still critically ill, he has demonstrated that he appears to be neurologically intact. His lungs continue to heal, and he is making steady progress. As always, we are grateful for the love and support that we have received. So, awesome. Awesome news for DeMar Hamlin. Awesome news for his family as well. And hope that the positive news continues to come in that regard. Also, I wanted to point really quickly something out, because I'm going to steal Gil's bit really quickly. Are you ready for this?
Sure.
We get tweets, right?
There you go, yeah.
Jesse Welch, and I think this is a great point. The college football halftimes make me really respect soccer, and they're extremely quick halftime. Say what you will about the sport of soccer, because I know there's a lot of, soccer's boring, whatever. The broadcast and the way that soccer, the game, is executed is the most flawless thing in sports. It is, you have a 45-minute half, you have your stoppage, you have a break, you have your 45-minute half, you have your stoppage, of whatever, whatever format of play that you're in, you move on from there, whether it's a draw, whether you get to extra periods, whatever it is. Soccer's freaking awesome when it comes to the way that it is played and broadcasted within a parameter. Like, you know what you're getting, you know how long it's going to be, and you're in and you're out. Very much a fan of soccer, the way it's broadcast. Just throwing it out there.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is. The college football halftimes, it still throws me off every year when football comes back, JVT, of you watch college football on Saturday, and you're like, oh, my God, it's halftime. Let me go do six things, and I'll be back in time for it. I'll miss one play in the third quarter. And then the NFL gets going the next day, and you're like, oh, it's halftime. Let me go to the kitchen quick. And you turn back around, and you're like, whoa, where did the third quarter kick off?
Dude. Yeah, college really needs to fix that. Can I also say, too, like, when you're talking about these broadcast times and whatnot as well, when you're talking, like, they need to fix it from college football standpoint. The NFL has gotten so much better. Remember when they used to do the stupid commercial after touchdown, kickoff, touchdown, then you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then go to another commercial after
touchdown,
the kickoff.
Touchdown, commercial, kickoff, touchdown.
Fuck. Oh, boy. That was close. I almost dropped an F-bomb. Very much ridiculous in terms of getting pretty low. See, Kelly gets me because we're just chatting like we're buddies.
Yeah, that's right.
Football is what I was going to say. Anyway, all right, NBA. We'll get to the awards coming up momentarily.
Real quick, JVT. I do want to answer, we get tweets. A couple other ones. We had getting a couple tweets just asking about golf and kind of our processes and websites to look at. Like, there are a bunch out there that I use regularly. One that JVT and I were discussing during the break, Data Golf. That's one of the best ones out there for looking up some statistical information. And then FantasyNational.com, which Pat Mayo runs, one of the best guys in the business when it comes to DFS, both golf, NFL. Runs an incredible site, does work with DraftKings, but his site is Fantasy National. That is where I'll do a lot of my kind of base stat modeling off of. Great website to check out. It is a subscription-based site, but it is not very expensive. If you are trying to, you know, get more involved into golf betting and stuff, that is, those are two sites I would highly, highly recommend taking a look at.
Four games tonight in the NBA, right? We get four of them tonight.
Four or five. Is four?
Let's see. I think it's a short card either way.
Four,
we get four. So, early game, Memphis and Orlando. I want to focus on one of the primetime games because you and I both share thoughts here. So we'll go to this quickly. Boston on the road against Dallas. A very interesting matchup for multiple reasons. Obviously, the last time that we saw the Boston Celtics in a weird spot on the road against the Oklahoma City Thunder, they're in the midst of a road trip through the middle of our country, right? They're going to do the Texas two-step, Dallas, San Antonio, and then I think head back home. So the Celtics are up to a three-point favorite, total of 231.5. So I laid 2.5. You and I were talking about this off the air when it came to this matchup here. The Mavericks are still pretty beat up from a injury standpoint, and it's injuries to guys who are, I would say, some of their better defenders, Dorian Finney-Smith, Josh Green, Max Kleba. These are guys who really help them on that end of the floor, and against a Boston Celtics team that comes into this much healthier, right? You know, nobody of note is on this injury report for the Boston Celtics off of a performance in which they gave up 150 points to the Oklahoma City Thunder without Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I think that this is, if you want to use the bounce back spot theory, Kelly, that might be one of them. I also just think it's a Mavericks team that doesn't have many defensive options for a Celtics team that has a lot of offensive oriented guards like Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, and others who are going to have a lot of success here today.
Yeah, I am with you 100%. This is a bet I put in, man, as soon as I saw opening lines come out yesterday. Not that I think the line is, you know, super far off. This is one of those situational spot bets that I don't make a ton of, I would say, JVT. You know, you and I really base a lot of what we do NBA based off of numbers and where we think there's a line off from the numbers that we make. This is just, the Celtics gave up 150 points their last time out. This team is too good. Robert Williams will be back tonight. Too good, and I think this Mavericks team's still a little overrated, at least the record-wise, for what they're dealing with some injuries you're talking about. I love this spot tonight for Boston. Come back, bouncing back from that Thunder loss the other night.
Yeah, and defensively, too, Boston, I mean, you mentioned just bouncing back. They also have a bunch of options to send to Luka Doncic. Doncic is a guy who wants to go after mismatches, right, hunt switches, do all the – there's not – when you're talking about starting
luck.
Five, like, who are you going to go after?
Yeah, good luck.
If you're Luka Doncic.
When it comes to perimeter defense, there's not a tougher team in the league to go against.
Yep. So it'd be interesting to see who he tries to go after. And to your point, it's not massive, but if we're talking about win differential and where this Dallas team is at statistically, should probably have like at least one fewer win just about than what their record shows at this point right now. So Luka Doncic is incredible. And this is also the other in-game aspect when we talk about like in-game stuff is Dallas, when Luka goes to the bench, is generally – it's a pretty good spot in-game to kind of go in against Dallas, especially if they're off to a pretty good start, because those are the minutes in which they kind of fall off a cliff a little bit. But we're in agreement there. Other games that we have today, you always want to wait. It's funny. So we have to take us behind the scenes a little bit, Kelly. We do our digital meetings, and one of the biggest impressions up on the for the VSiN website is NBA Injury Report, right? And I think it's because I write – check the injury report almost for every single one of these games because you want to confirm that. And it's the same thing here. Memphis is going to take on Orlando. It's the second leg of a back-to-back for the Memphis Grizzlies. It's going to be the third game in four nights, I believe, for them as well. They're a seven-point favorite right now with a total of 230.5. I don't think there's really any indication that anybody is going to sit for the most part, but you always just want to make sure just in case. This is a Grizzlies team that asks a lot out of their players. It's not generally a team that rests like frequently, that it could be the case here, especially guys like Jaren Jackson Jr. who got off to a late start to the season because of injury. But always want to monitor injury reports here, and that would be the case because Memphis is on that second leg of a back-to-back and playing quite a bit of basketball. I know that you were in on Orlando from a futures perspective. Should also point out for Orlando, Bol Bol, still in health and safety protocol, not going to play. Jalen Suggs is questionable. Mo Wagner, still suspended. Shuma Kiki, still out as well. But I did not have a read here. I think Orlando, rightfully so, fell back down to earth after a really good run because they were just getting pretty lucky from a perimeter standpoint. The 3-point shooting numbers for opponents were ridiculous.
Yeah, the way they've handled these suspensions has been weird because they've played out over 2-3 games now because you have to have 8 players ready to go, right? So you're allowed to push it back. Yeah, it's a little weird, but yeah, Magic very depleted in that game tonight. Honestly, JVT, the rest of the card, I love that Boston play tonight. The rest of the card, I don't really see much of an edge. in any of those games. You got Jazz at the Rockets. Jazz laying 6.5, 230.5. And then Clippers and Nuggets tonight, man. I can't wait to watch that game. Correct, looks like yeah. We're going to get Kawhi and Paul George in it. But I've got, from a betting standpoint, nothing on it.
Yeah, we'll see with George. He actually has a hamstring issue that he's been dealing with. So he's wearing a compression sleeve on the leg. So we'll see if maybe that helps him out. But right now listed as questionable with Paul George. But that's the only one. I'm Nick Batum as well. All right, second hour of A Numbers Game. Jake Hahn's going to be with us. Talk a little bit about what's going on in the National Hockey League. We'll get to our awards predictions in the NBA as well. Find some value in the board.